part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm gonna do it part.
All right, well, let's get started. This is Part-Time Fanboy, and I am Christian Horn, and I am on the line again with my friend Jason Holtham, and we, playwright, writer, screenwriter Jason Holtham, and we are here to discuss the rest of Jessica Jones, Marvel's Jessica Jones.
Be very clear about that. Not just some other random Jessica Jones.
Not just some Jessica Jones that we met on the street. Because God knows you know that there's some Jessica Joneses out there.
Oh, God. She's having such a weird summer. She's trending on, you know.
Yeah, I know. That's
very
funny.
Okay.
So when we left off last week, I had gotten up to episode 6. And you you had finished episode 7.
That's right.
And so 7 was AKA Top Shelf Perverts. So this is kind of where the series, I don't know, how did it finish off for you? I don't want to jump in too much, but...
I that's a really good point, that after Top Shelf Perverts, you know, it becomes so much about the fight against Kilgrave and how she's going to beat him. And I felt like it just started just ramping up, got a little crazy. Like, it got a bit nuts after that. But, I mean, that episode, like, the last 10 minutes of that are just great. You know, that whole bit in the police station, I think, is you know, it was in the trailer, so you knew it was coming, but it was still, oh, God, I really loved it. I loved watching Tennant's Kilgrave and just, like, the depths of getting into who he is and why he is the way he is. I don't know. I was still in the tank for it, but I'm sensing that you may not have been.
Well, let me just say, like, off the bat, I think the series is fantastic. I think it was a really great ride. I really enjoyed it. I do think that Daredevil is superior to this by far, because once we kind of, like, Top Shelf Perverts was the episode where I kind of sat up and went, like, you want to do what now? Like, I was like, what? Like, she wants to go into maximum security, like, prison, so that Kilgrave will have to go into the prison to get her. And I'm like thinking to myself, like, did this thing just turn into a sitcom? Like what? This is like the dumbest plan ever. When you're watching a TV show and you're, like, really into the character and you think the character is somewhat intelligent, you know, and kind of crafty and good at what she does, and then it's like, you know, you're absolutely right that the scene at the end of the episode, you know, is fantastic, and David Tennant's Kilgrave kind of, I think, makes his first, like, sort of, like, really big appearance in that episode where he lets his, like, powers, like, fly, right?
Yeah, that's really the first time that we see him full on.
Yeah, but the moment that she's, like, talking about this plan that she has, I was just like, you got to be effing kidding me. Like, please don't let the rest of the series be like this. And thankfully, it was just contained. Like, they quashed it right in that episode. I was like, please do not let this be, like, Jessica's quest to get put into, like, security, like, max detention prison, you know?
But it's such a great, like, the thing that I like about it, and one thing that I really like about just sort of the way this fits into the MCU and the way that they dealt with Kilgrave was that no one seemed to believe her. And, like, that's why I bought this plan. As crazy as it was, I'm like, that everyone told her that this was a crazy plan and they wouldn't let her go through with it. But, like, that was the only way to definitively prove that Kilgrave existed.
Yeah. I don't know about that.
I sort of get it in the most convoluted and insane way.
Yeah.
But I also like the reality of dealing with someone who could do what he does. Like, in a way, we talked last time a little bit about Preacher, and there's obviously the overlap between Kilgrave's powers and Preacher's powers. And I liked dealing with the, like, how do you fight someone who can do these things? Like, how do you stop someone like that? This was such an interesting problem to solve.
Yeah.
And I felt like they just kept coming up with more interesting ways to deal with it.
Well, you know? Here's the thing. And I would say episode 7 is the definite marker point for me where I went like, okay, this is not going as well as I was going to, as I'd hoped that it would. Not saying that it's not excellent, because I do think it's excellent, but there were things that really, after episode 7 and beyond, that I found to be like really outstanding, and then things that just like drove me crazy, like wanting to pull my hair out. And it's just like, like, at some point during this series, and I said this to my wife, and I even posted it on Facebook, and nobody said anything, like crickets, but like, I thought that the relationship between Jessica and Kilgrave started becoming very much like the relationship between Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner. Like, it really became about like setting up all these elaborate traps and all these elaborate things to do. Yep. And then by the end of them, Kilgrave would get out of them. And not only that, but like Jessica Jones and her team would be just like decimated, like they got the anvil dropped on their heads like every time, and that got a little repetitive and a little annoying after a while, because it started to make the character look really stupid to me.
Right. And I like that she wasn't in a lot of ways smarter than Kilgrave. Like, that I actually appreciate that, because it made him more terrifying to me, that, you know, he had contingencies and that he had thought through what this would mean more than she had, which I appreciated. And I appreciated her as a character who is canny in a way, but is not a great planner. Like, none of her plans were very good. The whole season, like, she's just not very good at this, like, at planning things out, which I like about the character. I like that consistency up until, you know, the end, when even, again, her very elaborate plan goes horribly awry, but it's enough to get him close enough. And I liked that.
Yeah, and that's the thing. That's the thing is towards the end, you know, and I just didn't buy the finale as much as I probably should have, you know. It to me was a little bit of a, like, Breaking Bad is like my favorite TV show of all time, and I really dug the finale, but spoilers for, you haven't watched Breaking Bad. I'm going to spoil it for you, but something happens in the final episode and they just skip over something, and I'm like, there's no way that would have gone down the way it went down. And I just don't buy him, like, walking right up to her and being like, oh, you are under my control. Like, I just, the whole season, he's been way too smart, way too crafty for that. You know what I mean? And then he just, like, walks up to her, and she's like, okay, grabs him by the neck and snaps his neck, you know?
Yeah. It seemed a little sudden. I mean, I don't know.
It seemed a little bit like, let's wrap this up. Like, we got to wrap this up.
Yeah, we got to figure a way out of this hole.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no other way out. You can't put him back in jail again.
Yeah, yeah.
And I felt like Kristen Ritter sold it almost enough. But yeah, I wish it had been, I'm with you, I wish that it had been a little bit more of a mistake on his part. Or like she leapt to him or whatever it was, as opposed to him just like walking right up to her, when I'm like, there's no way she's under your control.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That you are way too trusting of that.
Yeah. Well, don't you.
The part that really pulled me out was Hope. Like, the end of Hope, that just seemed way out of character and way too much.
Wait, what was that?
When Hope Slotman, spoilers, takes yourself out. I was like, that seemed too much.
Yeah.
Yeah. After all we've gone through that character, for it to end like that, I was like, really? That?
That's what? A pretty That's- hardcore way to go, too.
Yeah. Yeah. And just, I don't know. It just seems so unnecessary there.
The thing that just kept bothering me is that they keep coming up with these plans, right? And they keep coming up with all these things. And for some reason, even by the end, like even the final, like sort of like assault at the docks, they sort of like trick him by putting Patsy Walker in like headphones, you know, and I saw that coming a mile away. I'm like, oh, that's not her. That's Patsy, you know, but she still tries to assault him frontally. Like nobody tries to sneak up on this guy. Nobody tries to take him out from behind. Nobody tries to sneak up on him. Nobody tries to like, you know, misdirect him at all. They just frontally, except for that one first assault in the park in the beginning, you know, where they're trying to like, you know, sneak up on him. They just don't even try to. After that point, it's like, whatever, we're just going to charge him. And I'm like, but that's the stupidest way to handle this guy, right?
Exactly. But I thought also that like after that, I was surprised that he'd been smart enough to actually hire bodyguards. That I thought was a great sort of way out of that. That it wasn't that they were, I loved that like weird little torture scene. The guy's like, you don't have to torture me.
Yeah.
I will tell you, I'm not being compelled. He paid me and not enough to lose my kneecap. I'm good.
Yeah, yeah. And the other guy, what's his name? Simpson still wants to torture him.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, man, Simpson.
Yeah, it's interesting how that character really played out, because after you kind of dropped that little hint last week where you're like, oh, no, he kind of becomes something else. I looked him up and I was like, oh, wow. You know, he becomes Nuke. And what's really interesting to me is because like what that actor like in the first half of the season, like after he gets introduced and he gets all involved in the chase for Kilgrave, he was like, he kept doing stuff with his face and like he was kind of like twitchy, and it seemed to me like he was like a little bit of like sort of like a speed freak or something. Like I was like, I don't get like what's going on with him. And then, you know, all these reveals start happening as to like what he's been doing to himself or been having done to him, like via some shadow organization. And I'm like, dude, like that's brilliant. If he was playing it with that intent during the whole season.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, he had to have been playing that end from the beginning. And it's great. It's like built all of like the not trust of him and how tough he was. God, I thought about last time, but the fight choreography with him and Patsy in that fight is just great. The second time they fight, when she's all amped up, also just amazing.
Oh yeah,
fight choreography. Oh
yeah,
I love that. I really hope that they like they follow through on that and bring him into Daredevil as Nuke and like really knit this together, because once I got to that reveal. Even though it was a little spoiled for me, but once he said, give me a red, I was like, oh, that is perfect.
Perfect. Yeah, the pills are red, white, and blue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that scene, Daredevil Born Again is one of my favorite Daredevil storylines. And I would love to see them tackle that, like, in season 3 or 4 or whatever.
Yeah,
that and to give us to bring Nuke back that way.
Well, I can't imagine that they wouldn't, because by the end of the series, right, he's sort of like disappeared.
Right, he's back in their control.
Yeah,
so like it'll connect to Jessica's people and Reva's, whatever Reva's connection to all of this is as well.
Oh yeah, I mean, well. Yeah, I mean, it's really funny because they really do seem to be, you know, they introduced the night nurse to sort of like the last, was it the last episode or?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's like, okay, now we're getting into like sort of crossover territory. Like we're starting to sort of interconnect the worlds, right? And that just seems like really cool, because at first it seemed like there were like minor references, like you said last week. But now it seems like, okay, now, and she even talks about Daredevil, like Matt Murdock. And it's like, oh, okay, like this is, they are seriously going to dovetail into one another.
Yeah. Though it does make me wonder what the timing of it is, because like a lot of shit happens in Daredevil.
Yeah.
Kitchen that doesn't seem to have any effect on anything that happened in the show.
That's true. And it's not like Hell's Kitchen is like a giant, super giant neighborhood, right?
Yeah. You'd think that like three major explosions and a guy in a red suit kicking the, you know, Wilson Fisk's ass, plus the death of a reporter, would have somehow been referenced in some way.
Yeah, she was busy. She was busy dealing with her own craziness.
Right.
Speaking of craziness, how did you enjoy the crazy redheaded sister from upstairs, the Martha Plimpton sort of wannabe, or did you despise her as much as I did, as both a character and sort of like a story device?
I really did. I wanted to not despise her, and I liked, you know.
Oh, so you liked her?
I liked her in the beginning. I thought like her and the brother were cute. It broke my freaking heart when poor Ruben got killed.
Sure.
But then she became so one note and so unpleasant, and I appreciate at the end when they try to give her a little sort of grace with the grief and just sort of try to explain this is why she is, and the great little moment at the end with the package was nice. But Jesus Christ, lady. Everything else, even after Kilgrave nearly hangs her, she's still a bitch. And I was like, for God's sakes, come on.
Yeah, yeah, just yeah.
Cut her some damn slack.
Yeah, and she definitely has a little bit of that moment where, you know, they get out of that restaurant where Kilgrave has set up that death trap, where she's like, oh, you don't understand. Some crazy stuff has been going down. And the cop says to her, like, well, what do you mean? And then, you know, she kind of looks at the other guy and becomes, like, gets a little bit of sense knocked into her. And she's like, well, I almost got, you know, somebody killed themselves in front of me. And we, you know what I mean? Like, that's pretty crazy, don't you think?
Pretty crazy.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm glad that like she didn't, but I was still like, you need to be convinced not to blow the whistle on these people. Like, you really, she's really got to twist your arm, and it's got to be this touch and go. It didn't feel right. Like, it didn't feel like a person that I wanted to care about or invest in.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. What's interesting? No, what's interesting to me is like the scene where, again, you know, she shows up at the restaurant and she's hiding and she's like, let's go get you. Everyone's like, yeah. And I'm like, this does not make any sense at all. Like that was a little bit where the writing went off the rails for me as well. I was like, nah, this doesn't make sense to me that they would all be like, let's go get Jessica Jones. Like it just kind of came out of left field, right?
Yeah, certainly all of them jumping on board and like all the guys jumping on board for that seemed really weird. And it kind of ruined the part that I liked about it, which is, again, making Jessica a complicated person in the amount that she was using them and just pumping them for information anyway.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, like undercut that to have them turn on her so quickly without even fully realizing it was because she was just pumping them for information, you know? Like, it just didn't, yeah. Like, that whole chunk all the way through, like, that, which episode was that? Was that Take a Bloody Number?
I'm not sure off the top of my head.
No, it's, oh, God, it was right there. I can't remember which one it was. And it just was not, it really didn't do it for me.
Yeah.
Like, that did not help.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting, though, because I'm looking through the list of episodes, you know, online, and a lot of stuff happened. I mean, I so much stuff happened in those last like seven episodes. Like so much gets resolved, and so much, you know, I thought that like seven and eight, like when she moves in with Kilgrave and they kind of have that sort of like little thing going on, things slow down. But then once like Kilgrave gets put in the cell, and you know, you get sort of the parent revelation and all that stuff, like that's when it sort of like started kicking into high gear for me again. What did you think about like his parents?
Oh, I love that. I love the revelation, though. You know, we talked about it, you know, not being a pheromone, and the tweak on it being a virus was okay. I was like, okay, that's okay. I will accept that as opposed to being a pheromone. I love the bit with the parents, like, just because those actors are so damn good.
Yeah.
That it was great. And like the reveal that they were trying to help him. All of that like character stuff I thought was great. And everything from when they get him, the restaurant where Hope dies is after they get him in the prison. But like that whole episode when he's in the prison and Jerry betrays them, I thought that was all just golden. Really great. And super, like, super engaging.
Well, geez, the moments when the parents go into the cell, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that was just captivating.
Totally. And, like, then they realize that things pulled out, and, like, oh, God. Then even Jerry's, like, slow dawning of what she has released is so great. All that I was on board with.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because it's funny when the mother like finally kind of like freaks out and stabs Kilgrave, I thought she got him in the neck. Like, I thought he was dead. Like, I was like, oh my God, she just like cut his, you know, and there was a part of me that's like, well, if Kilgrave's dead, where do we go from here?
What do we do for four more episodes?
Yeah, exactly. But she got him in the shoulder, and that scene where he's just like, for every year you left me, you're going to step, like, that was just like, forget it. Like, it was just so incredibly painful. And it's funny, the twist that they gave you with his parents, where you feel like that they're like these soulless monsters that experimented on him. And it's like, no, we were trying to help him, you know?
Oh, just heartbreak. I felt like that was one of the great things about Kilgrave was the amount of humanity, even in his horribleness, they gave him. And like the amount of those complications and the great playing house bits where he is almost a regular person.
Yeah.
Except for the, if we're not back in 2 hours, cut your faces off.
Yeah, exactly.
That, like, to throw those things out. But that, I love that part where he was talking about how carefully he has to pick his words.
Yeah. But don't you think he was full of it when he was doing that?
No, I didn't. I was like, I mean, full of it, like, he's a narcissist, so he's only concerned about himself. But like the idea, when I start thinking about him as a child, as like his parents abandon him when he's like 12.
Sure.
The amount of time it takes him to figure all of those things out, and like, not that I'm feeling good for a serial rapist and murderer.
No.
I'm just saying, you can see how it's the result of his own trauma, the trauma of his parents leaving him and having to like raise himself with this godlike power that no one taught him how to use appropriately.
It's interesting because I think the genius of Kilgrave is that he kind of represents something that, well, to a certain extent, that we all kind of have had inside of us, which is being obsessed with someone who doesn't love us back, right? Wanting to be with somebody that doesn't really, you know, care for us or want to be with us in a romantic way. And obviously he's taking it to a level that none of us should ever have gone or go to, you know. But that is the sort of like core of his sort of function in the whole thing, which is like, I love you, like, and I want you to love me. And I feel that a lot of people can identify with that.
Yeah, I definitely can. I mean, I'm thankfully more, you know, mature and adult than the person I had been in my 20s. And I've definitely felt those feelings and felt that sort of intense, obsessive urge about women and relationships and things I wanted to pursue. And yeah, you couple that with the ability to make people do things. And it makes his obsession on making Jessica choose him of her own free will even more intense, you know, and yeah, even more human in a way. Again, the great part about the playing house section, about him thinking that he doing all of these things will convince Jessica to love him.
Yeah.
But he still just can't help himself.
Well, it's just really funny because so much of his, you know, motivation or the way that he acts is childish. You know what I mean? It's like a child, you know, him dressing in the suits, him, you know, sort of like believing, not childish, but maybe juvenile, you know what I mean? Where it's like, this is what matters, like me in nice suits, me having things, me being able to do things for you. Like these, and it's very, he's very sort of like immature and a bit simplistic, despite the fact that he comes across like very debonair, you know what I mean? In a way, it's almost like what Donald Trump is. Like he believes that his value comes from the things that he owns and what he can manipulate people to do, you know what I'm saying? And what he can give you, right?
Right, right. And from his power. I mean, it is that immature, infantilized bit where it's also he is completely without impulse control in any way, shape, or form. He's like a toddler who just sees everything and says, that's mine. And then, you know, devises just terrible things for people because he's in a fit of pique.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But it's, yeah.
Yeah. I really did love the moment where, you know, the hostage situation where like Jessica Jones kind of showed him like, look, you could do some good. And he's still kind of like, he gets it, but then he's like, oh, but you have to do it with me. Like, I don't understand this. Like, why would I want to help people? You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's just like insane. Like you're like, oh, you have no, like I asked my wife, I'm like, is that like a psychopath? Like somebody who has no conscience? Like that, is that what that's called? You know? Yep. Because there are those type of people that they just don't get it, you know?
Utterly lacking in any sense of morality or any obligation to other people. I mean, that was one of my favorite episodes because I really appreciated like her moral dilemma of, is it worth me sacrificing my life to teach him how to be a better person?
Yeah.
And I honestly really thought that she might go further with it, but then I loved that she didn't. Like, it made me so happy that she was still like, nope, I am not that good. I'm going to throw you in jail.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that kind of frustrated me a little bit about this, especially as the show went on, is at some point it's like, you know, she's very much taking this on to be her own challenge. You know, she keeps trying to exclude people from helping her. And we know why, because the guy can control people and stuff like that. But there's definitely some point towards like maybe 9 or 10 where I'm like, really, can we just call the Avengers in? Like at this point, like you can't handle this. You know, there's a part of me that's like, why does this have to be your problem and your problem alone? You know what I mean?
Exactly. Where are the agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's Inhumans, but you'd think this would, like, Coulson would have heard about this.
Yeah, or something.
This would show up on someone's radar.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I feel like that'll be part of the Civil War thing, is that, like, Civil War will tie all of this together somehow.
Oh, wow. You think so?
They kind of have to. Like, in order for Civil War to function at all, they have to start making the case that there are all of these people with powers all over the place, and we need to figure out some way to regulate them. I mean, it seems like they're pushing away from like the registration end from the trailer, which is still pretty great, and more to, you know, sort of containment of rogue people with powers, But this all has to be, like, they have to mention all of this shit. Like, it's got to be part of it, you know? It's got to exist in that world for it to make sense, you know?
Yeah, I you know, it, what's interesting to me, and I'm really behind on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I think I'm like 4 or 5 episodes. And yeah. I think you're right. I mean, if the goal is for, you know, all this to tie in together or exist in the same universe, and you've got this guy, I mean, by the end of the show, it's definitely like in the news, right? That there was some sort of, you know, and at some point I was just like, dude, you need to pick up the phone, like, and call somebody to get some help. Like, can you get Captain America on the line? Like, they have a tower in the middle of Manhattan. Right? Like, can't you just like go and be like, look, I seriously need help? Because the sort of self-flagellating like martyrdom that Jessica Jones was like indulging in, like, I just kind of, it definitely started wearing thin a little bit, you know what I mean?
Yeah, certainly once we got past, you know, Top Shelf Perverts and him holding an entire police department hostage, like that's definitely like, okay, where you're a little bit beyond me.
Yeah.
You'd think that, yeah, someone would make some kind of call to someone.
Yeah.
You know, there's enough word of this spreading around, enough people are talking about it, that like, someone's got to come check this out, right?
Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting that they did take the twist that it's a virus, right? That he employs or something. Because then there was a part of me that, you know, I'm going through the Avengers roster and I'm like, hey, you know, couldn't Thor just take this guy out? Like, he's invulnerable to disease. Like, nobody can stop him. Couldn't Thor just like tackle him with a hammer, you know?
Exactly. Just hit him with the hammer and then you're done. There you go.
Yeah. And, you know, that's another thing about Luke Cage. I mean, I guess in this universe, and well, I'm not so sure about the Marvel comics, you know, my understanding that he was a little bit more invulnerable to toxins in the comics. So if it was a virus, wouldn't Luke Cage be able to sort of stave it off? But I guess not.
No. I mean, it makes sense. I mean, it seems like they're really just focusing on the, like, he has steel hard skin and some measure of super strength as what they're focusing their energy on. It'll be interesting to see what they get into, how far they get into it with his series when they get around to that.
Yeah.
And I like the virus, but yeah, it does like, once you start pulling those threads, and again, it also matters on like, where does this fit time-wise? You know, is this all happening before Age of Ultron, in sort of that like middle part where like, freaking Captain America couldn't call the Avengers to deal with S.H.I.E.L.D. Like, that all just happened without any of them being involved.
Yeah.
Or are we after that? In which place, again, they've got a facility in upstate New York that you could just drive to.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, can you help me out? Yeah, that was definitely one of the things that I felt like really started wearing me down, like, as the show went on, when she was just like making it like her problem alone, despite the amount of people that kept wanting to help her, kept wanting to come to her, kept wanting. And I understand, like, they were really trying to hit that like self-sacrificing hero thing on the head, but then at some point it becomes a little too overbearingly Spider-Man, where it's like, no, it's just me, it's gotta be just me, and it just gets into sort of punishment, right?
Though I liked, after Sinbin, when, you know, she realizes that he can't control her, like, I think the counterbalance to that is that they really invested in she can't trust anyone. Like, the Luke Cage betrayal, I thought,
oh, yeah.
You got me.
Yeah.
That, I was really on board with that. I was like, oh, that's the worst possible thing.
Yeah. He pretty much took her to task.
Yeah. I mean, again, another great fight. But it was just that heartbreak of like, right, she can't even trust Luke Cage.
Yeah, at this point, right?
I mean, Kilgrave's escape from Sinbin, when he just like, casually even, just like, as he goes by, Patsy, put a bullet in your brain.
Oh.
I was like, oh God.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That actually made both of us like jump off the couch where we were like, oh my God. Yeah.
So I remember, and I felt that this like the same thing this time with the end of it. I remember we were talking about like if Trish doesn't make it through this, it would just be crushing.
Yeah.
And a split second before she showed up right at the end where I thought that like she was mad at her for almost letting her get taken, for like using her as bait, for all, like there would be some sort of break between them. And I was like, I don't know if I can take that. I really don't know.
Yeah. Talk about a character that I ended up just like really, that's the interesting thing is like, I kept thinking when I was watching this show, you know, the actress that plays Patsy Walker and just physically is would be the lead character if this was a show like in the 70s or like the 80s, you know what I'm saying? Like very blonde, Aryan, blue-eyed, you know, and, you know, would be sort of like the flawless one and stuff like that. And I really like how she was sort of the sidekick, you know, the partner, you know?
Yeah. And the conscience, like I really liked how that character developed. I love the flashbacks to show like how they got there. Like Rebecca De Mornay.
I know.
And I was like, I could almost just watch that show.
I know. The torture of Patsy.
I'd be okay.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's like, I really, really want her to have her own show. I really, really want to see Hellcat at some point. Like I'm kind of dying for it because like that actress and sort of that character just became like a real favorite of mine that every time she popped up on the screen, I was like, oh, look, Patsy's here. Like I was just like ready to like, you know, just have her walk through like whatever craziness that she was going to go through. And that guy Simpson definitely provided some.
Oh yeah. Ugh.
Like when she kicks his butt, like takes the medication and he's trying to talk her out of it. Like, and she was like, what did she say? She said like one word or something. Like she was like, I forget what it was, too bad or something like that. And then she just started kicking his ass, you know? And it was just like, that was a fantastic scene. But then all of a sudden, like you said, like she can't breathe. And I know that you were probably just like me where I was like, no.
You can't. Not like this.
No, definitely not like this. I was so glad that the ambulance got there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm so glad they pulled her back. And I was like, okay, this is good. And, you know, maybe that'll, like, feed into it. That, like, because I'm with you. I want to see, I'm so excited to see the next season of this. Honestly, no, I'm equally excited to see the next season of Daredevil. I mean, we talked about it. I like Daredevil. And I get what you're saying about this. The last half of this season is maybe a little overstuffed with action and sort of twists and turns and dead ends and whatever. But I just felt like Daredevil, there just wasn't enough in the second half of the season for me.
Oh, see, that's so interesting because I really felt that Daredevil, like, sustained a momentum that kept going. And I felt like during the middle of this series, it felt like the momentum slowed and the tension was still there, but the momentum was lacking a little bit. And then things started to get a little repetitive and a little silly, you know? Again, like the Wile E. Coyote Roadrunner thing where I was like, really? Really? Like, yeah, like I said before, like, when is somebody going to drop an anvil on his head? Like it's, I was just like, come on, man. Like, give me something. Because, you know, I think there were like four plans that they, four times, maybe three, where they caught him and he gets away. And not only does he get away, but he just like devastates everything in his path.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm just like, come on, give me a break.
Whereas, I like that, what were you going to say?
No, I was just going to say, whereas Daredevil felt like it had a direction, and maybe because the character had more history, you know, but Daredevil felt like it had a direction where it was going, and it got there, and it kind of kept the pace and the tension sustained, to me at least anyway.
For me, it was the other way around. I felt like Daredevil was kind of attenuated. We're sort of like, there's like one event every episode and the rest of it was a lot of Matt Murdock feeling bad about himself and sort of moping. And I didn't feel like it quite had that like narrative push and the whatever was going on. Like the thing that I like about this with Kilgrave is that his goal is so clear and it involves Jessica directly, but it felt like the Kingpin, Vincent D'Onofrio was amazing. That is an amazing performance. It was one of my favorite things. I'm so glad that he can be around in other things, even if he's in jail. And I'm interested to see, you know, how his wife develops, and that'll be great.
Oh yeah.
Season two. But it just, it seems so sort of amorphous and sort of like, what's going on? Why is this so bad? Why does Daredevil care so much about this?
And I can see what you're saying, yeah.
It, to me, it didn't have that, like, that strong narrative. And I hear what you're saying about this, where it's a little too, like I said, a little too many dead ends and a little too much back and forth. But I like that it felt so active, as she's like, she's trying to make a plan and he's got his own plan to get her. And it's that dance of those two characters going after each other, which I just really bought into, partly because they're just so great and like their chemistry is so right on. That it was worth it just watching for that. And I kind of ignored some of the things that I was like, yeah, the sister, even most of Hope's storyline was like, yeah, okay, whatever, girl in jail, not really the important thing here.
That's funny because, well, how about the way the lawyer plays out? You know, I mean, that was insane. And it's funny because I called it. Like, as soon as she walks in to watch him, I'm like, oh, she's going to try and get him to get her to sign the divorce papers.
Yep.
But at first, it seemed like they were wiggling their way out of that. Like, no, no, no. We were leading you down that path, but we're not going to go there. And then they switched it around again. And it was like, oh, no, they are going there.
Oh, my God, they did. And it was so good. And like, it was so great that it got so awful for her.
Yeah.
I loved the character and I loved what it, like, what a raging bitch she was. But I was glad that it ended kind of tragically for her, as a little bit of comeuppance. But yeah, that bit in the house
was
horrifying.
You said you wanted a death of a thousand cuts or something.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God.
Ugh. Yeah, I think Carrie Ann Moss kind of like pulled it out in that show.
Oh, totally.
Because that could have been like a really, you know, thankless sort of like bland role. And, you know, towards the end when things get, and I mean, she was a little bit one level during the whole thing, but like towards the end when she starts getting her comeuppance, it was just like, oh my God, you were just sort of like, no one should go like that.
Yeah, exactly.
And she still pulls it out in the end because her girlfriend saves her and kills her poor... Like, that's the thing. Like, her poor wife, you know, her spouse, gets her head caved in.
Yep. Yeah. It's like, exactly. It was the perfect sort of tragedy. And the girlfriend's, like, just ruined because of it as well. And, like, oh. All that was great. And I love, love, love that... There was no like import attached to that it was a lesbian couple. That entire line played out exactly as it would have if it had been a straight couple, if it had been a gay male couple, whatever couple it was, it played out perfectly straight. And I, but you know what I mean? That it was just like, this is just this story.
Yeah.
That you've seen a thousand times and it's still really, just really heart-wrenching.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, the one thing that I really do like about this show is, first of all, it is the first sort of, oh, you know what? I was mistaken. I mean, Agent Carter, I guess, would have been the first sort of female lead in a Marvel project, right?
Yeah, that was the first one.
Yeah, that's right. I wasn't crazy about Agent Carter, so maybe that's why I blanked it out.
Right.
What's that?
And she was also like the only woman in it, though.
Yeah, that's true. But like the thing that I really love about this is that you sort of have a female character that isn't perfect, isn't necessarily likable, isn't like warm and like fuzzy. There's really... except for her determination and her moral compass, there's really nothing that sort of makes her like the sort of quote unquote typical like female heroine that you would see on a show. You know what I'm saying?
Like, she's so abrasive and angry and difficult.
A slob.
And, like, Kristen Ritter, who I find very attractive, also has that face that is sometimes like, oh, you look terrible.
Yeah.
Or super hot. You know? it's just a matter of lighting, and, like, they did very little to soften any of her edges. And IO9 made a really great point about, because, you know, it's so much about trauma and PTSD. One of the things that they highlighted about the flashbacks is that she's still the same person. She was always this difficult, obnoxious, kind of self-righteous teenager person her whole life. Like, it's not like she was a happy person and then Kilgrave destroyed all of that. And now she drinks. It's just, this is who she is, and she's still damaged. And I liked that. I liked the sense that, like, after all of this, she's still going to have to help people and not really want to help people.
Yeah. Well, I found it very interesting, and I thought it was a really good twist, and I don't know if it was episode 6 or 7, you know, where the reveal, they sort of, like, have the whole conversation about her being a superhero and a costume and stuff like that. And then, you know, the first time she goes out to help somebody, that's when Kilgrave finds her, you know, and then that's where stuff starts to go, like, really bad. Right.
Oh God. I know. Oh man. That episode was another, like, punch to the throat, because the bit with, like, that it was her, like, the friend who's now a drug addict and who's going to be a social worker.
Yeah.
I am still really hoping that in the second season, when they dig into this IGH stuff, that there's more of a connection with Reva, and that there's a little bit more to why she was able to resist Kilgrave than just he made her kill someone when she didn't want to.
Well, and that's something that kind of bugged me too, where I was like, wait a minute, all of a sudden, like, I wish there had been a little bit, like, was it the shock of killing somebody that snapped her out of it? Was it, like, the trauma? Or was it just the fact that she had been with him for 6 months and built up an immunity?
Right. Like, there's got to be something more to it. And I felt, and this was, like, maybe just me projecting, I felt like there was something into, like, her touching Reva's blood. Because up until that point, like, literally until that point, she's still doing what Kilgrave says.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the first point where he says, come over here, and she doesn't, is after she's touched Reva's blood somehow. So I don't know, again, I don't know what the plan is with that, with Luke Cage and all of the IGH stuff and whatever that is supposed to be, supposed to reveal down the line. But I'm hoping there's just a little bit more to that.
Yeah, I mean, I did find it a little bit, I don't know, like, a little too coincidental, a little too convenient that the same company that is behind Simpson's drugs is sort of might have had something to do with her, you know, superpowers. I was like, that was a little bit, like, too maybe Batman Jack Napier connection for me, you know?
Yep. Yes, especially since it's an accident and, like, yeah, I don't want them to get into, like, again, the sort of weird, bad science fiction TV of overarching conspiracies with, you know, an alphabet soup of secret agencies again. But just something to tie it all, to tie one nice thing to tie it all together somehow.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like that, I mean, where do you think they're going to take Luke Cage at this point?
I mean, that is a really good question. They'll have to do some flashbacks,
I would imagine. Yeah.
But I hope that they just pick up from here and pick up with him trying to, like, I don't know, rebuild his own life.
Yeah.
So why he wouldn't just, like, take up with Jessica again? I mean, she's hot, he's hot, they like each other. I hope he goes on, like, some sort of journey of discovery for himself, but it brings him back to New York.
Yeah.
Something here to tie it back in.
Yeah, you know, the scene where they are in her apartment, like, after they sort of, like, meet back up, and he's talking on the phone with someone, and he's like, "Yeah, I'll talk to you later, buddy." Or all, and you find out that it was Kilgrave that he's talking to, which is, here's the other. Well, let's get into that. I was so hoping that was going to be like Danny Rand or something. I was like, "Oh my God, that's got to be Danny Rand on the phone." You know, just like my fanboy wish.
Yep. So hoping that it was, but it wasn't.
No, it wasn't. But the other thing too is that the logistics of him being able to reestablish control over the phone kind of was silly to me. I'm like, well, if this is a virus, like, what are we talking about here? Like, is it like, and his,
it wasn't that he was able to reestablish it over the phone. I didn't think that he was reestablishing it over the phone. What I thought was that he had boosted his power so it lasted longer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Luke lied to her about when he saw her last, saw him last.
Okay.
So that, like, when he saw her, because he makes a point about when he saw her, he tells her that it's been 6 hours, but it had only been 3 hours.
Oh.
And lasted longer. So that when he sees them at the club is when he can reestablish it.
Gotcha.
All that time, he was completely under his control and just following through on the plan of lying to Jessica about being under his control. That was how I took it.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because they dropped that little hint. Like, remember he says to that guy, go cross the street, stand in front of the fence, don't leave, you know, and they kind of establish that it only lasts for 12 hours. But then when they go back to the club, like much later on, he's still standing in front of the fence. And my wife and I were both like, hey, shouldn't he be gone by now? Like, should, exactly. And then you find out later, like, oh my gosh, it's lasting like 16 to 24 hours at this point.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it, like, I felt like that's what it was. Yeah. Yeah. That was that poor guy.
All these poor people but you know, they didn't follow up on like Kilgrave's threat at the end where he's like, if I die, there's going to be all these people around the city that are going to start committing suicide. They didn't follow up on that.
They didn't follow up on that. And I wonder if it was just something about him dying. Because it was the same thing with Patsy. Where I was afraid that she was going to have to stop her from hurting herself, because that was also one of his last things, that like, if I see you again or if you touch me, she's going to kill herself.
That's true.
But I guess it was something in the death completely dissipated the whole, which I'm fine with. Like, I will accept that.
Yeah.
I'll accept that a little bit of, you know, comic book magic that like, they're all instantly freed forever.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to say that I was disappointed that they killed him, because I thought like Tennant was so great and like he was so fantastic. And I was like, I would just love to have that character come back. Like, I mean, they couldn't have put him in a cell somewhere. Like you said, like they couldn't have figured something out. I really, really feel like it's such a waste of such a good actor and such a good character. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. I felt the same way. I felt like there probably wasn't any other way for them to end this right. And, you know, it's comic book. It's all comic book death.
His neck was snapped.
Somewhere, someone has a DNA sample and they'll figure something out.
Yeah.
I'm willing to accept that, like, in a couple of seasons, they'll find a way to bring him back.
Okay.
Whether he's a ghost or whatever, or whether, you know, I don't know. It's comic book death. I'm like, eh. clones, life model decoy. Who knows?
Yeah, no. Yeah, I think that these series, though, are going to stray away from that sort of thing, don't you?
Yeah, they seem to be trying to stick to, like, being more real and more grounded in the real world than, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or even the movies, you know?
Yeah. So, well, so next year is Luke Cage, I guess.
Yeah, next year, Luke Cage.
Luke Cage. What was that?
They haven't announced a date yet. They pushed off Iron Fist.
Yeah.
For Punisher.
Well, have they officially?
I thought so. I thought that it was official.
I thought it was just a rumor.
Maybe this is all rumors. Because, yeah, I mean, they've just started. I don't even think they've started filming Daredevil season 2 yet.
No, they started filming because that's where the Punisher is coming from.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And so, they've started shooting that, and there have been like on-set pics of what's his face, Berenthal. Berenthal playing the Punisher. So, yeah, no, I mean, so that will debut next year. So I'm just wondering, will it be Luke Cage and Daredevil, or will we get Luke Cage and Iron Fist, or will Daredevil be pushed back to 2017? I hope not, but yeah, I don't know. Well, there's going to be a lot of Marvel TV watching next year for sure.
Yes, definitely.
Cool.
Lot to come.
So all in all, we pretty much dug Jessica Jones, right?
Yes, very much.
Yeah, you liked it more than Daredevil, but I like Daredevil more. So
I like Daredevil a lot. I don't want to say like I like Daredevil a lot. This I like just a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely aspects of this that I really, really enjoyed. But like sort of towards the middle and end, it got a little too silly at points where I was like, come on already, come on, you know, somebody think with their brain. But it's really funny because they did have that one line where she said, like, you haven't slept. And she's like, and if you haven't slept, you're not going to think clearly. You're not going to do things right. And, you know, that to me was very much like a, and at least they addressed that, because even on like a show like 24, you know, like the guy gets no sleep and nobody says anything. You know what I mean? Like take a nap.
24 hours.
Yeah, like half an hour. You've been exactly. You've been up for 24 hours. What are you doing? All right, Jason. Well, thank you very much for coming on to this episode, these past two episodes of Part-Time Fanboy.
Thanks for having me on. I would love, it's been a pleasure. I'd love to come on back.
Cool. Yes. Well, we've got some plans that we want to put into motion. Hopefully we can do them over the holidays, but just to let everyone know, you are Jason Holtham and I am Christian Horn. And this has been the Jessica Jones Part 2 episode of Part-Time Fanboy. Thanks for listening, and hopefully we will be back soon with another episode. Bye.
Bye.
Part-Time Fanboy. Part-time. Part-time fanboy.com.